you're listening to Principal Broadcasting, featuring the League of Professionals with Muriel Donnelly, weekdays 10 to 4 p.m. with current topics to elevate your career to the next level.
Good morning and welcome to Principal Broadcasting. I'm your host, Muriel Donnelly, and this morning we have a wonderful lady joining us. She is a psychiatrist and the owner of Holistic Child Psychiatry, LLC, from Columbia, Maryland. Please welcome back to the show Dr. Phyllis J. Hefner. Welcome back. How are you this afternoon? This morning?
I am doing fine, thank you. And you?
Very good, thank you. Very, very good indeed. So I want to start off basically by just having you spend a minute just to go over what you do again so everyone out there, you know, who may not have heard of you, et cetera, will have an understanding.
I do what's called integrative holistic psychiatry for children, teenagers, and adults. So what that means is that I am looking at the person as a whole person rather than just looking at the brain and emotions and behaviors. And I'm looking to find what might be the underlying cause for the person's emotional or behavioral problems and trying to treat that problem rather than just give them a medication for, say, attention deficit or depression or anxiety. And I use all different types of treatments, and I try to minimize or even avoid the use of the medications if at all possible.
Wonderful. So we're going to talk about ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And the thing is, I heard a few months ago from a woman that apparently over the past few years, they've come to realize that there are far more people who actually have ADHD than they ever thought in the past. And probably about one in like 100 or something ridiculous like that. Now, do you think it's the lifestyle, the society that we live in? What do you think it is that's why there are so many people who suffer from ADHD?
I think there are many things going on. Lifestyle is definitely one of them. We live in a situation where people don't have patience. They don't need to wait for things. Things happen immediately. When you look at modern media, things are happening very rapidly, constant movement, constant noise, constant changing from thing to thing. And the brain kind of changes to meet with what it's seeing. So that's part of it. The other thing is what we're eating, what we're exposed to in the air, what, you know, we are doing with our lives also make a big difference. The food has changed tremendously. And that really can make a big difference in how well nourished the brain is. It will also make a difference in inflammation in the body, and that affects the brain and then therefore attention. We often don't get enough sleep. We often, you know, have problems with not getting enough exercise, which affects the brain and the body. We have all kinds of toxins in our air, in our water, in our food, you know, in our ground, everywhere, and that all affects the body. So all these things, I think, combine to make it harder and harder for the brain to work optimally and cause attentional problems and cause behavioral problems and cause problems with being able to sit still.
Right. And the thing is that I feel like, you know, because I have to be honest with you, before I would never have thought that all these things were the causes of ADHD. I mean, call it ignorance, but, you know, I, for the longest time, I always would have thought it would have been basically something that may have been genetic. And I don't think I'm the only one that thought that. So for me, this is scary what you're saying. Things like sleep and exercise, okay, you know, maybe we can get around that. But things like the food and the toxins that are everywhere, I mean, that just sounds like this is going to be a growing, growing problem. It's not going to get any easier.
Certainly not everyone is at as much risk as mm-hmm. other people because there is a genetic component to it. And there are things that we can do. In fact, there's a positive thing to some of this being environmental because we have some choices as to what we eat. Mm-hmm. We have choices as to what we are doing with our lives. And that can then, therefore, you know, affect, you know, how our brain forms and how it functions. So it's not a curse that we're doomed to having constant worsening brain function and attentional problems and things like that. As we're learning these other things that affect how our brain works, you'd have more control then.
Right. If you don't mind me asking you, what are some of the signs of ADHD? Because that's the other thing is, like, you know, some people may not be able to recognize the signs because you may just think a kid's being a kid. So, you know, are there any telltale signs?
Well, according to what's called the DSM-5, which is the psychiatric manual that helps psychiatrists diagnose someone, There are a list of different symptoms. The problem is those are symptoms. They do not say that it's, you know, specifically ADHD, and it's very easy to just go down the list of symptoms, give someone that diagnosis, and it be for some totally different reason. But the typical things that we see for someone that would indicate the possibility that they have attention deficit is that they're a person who has a lot of difficulty staying focused on things, especially things that they're not super interested in. So I have often heard a parent say, you know, well, he can pay attention to video games for hours. It can't be attention deficit. No, if someone's very interested, I've seen kids that love to read and they can read for hours, but put them into a situation where it's not their, you know, favorite thing. They can't stay focused. They get distracted. They start daydreaming. They, you know, start fidgeting and just cannot, you know, keep on task. They often will start many things and not complete them. They're disorganized often and misplace things or lose things. They often have difficulty with, you know, just knowing where they have things. They just don't put things in order. They just kind of pile things up instead of having a place for things and putting them away. They often seem to forget things easily. So if a parent tells a child, for instance, to go and do several items, they may remember one or two of the things, but often cannot remember the other things. And often that's misunderstood as just being, you know, oppositional and disobedient. But it's often because they can't remember it. That's the attentional part. There's a list of 9 specific symptoms that, to be, you know, thorough, you're supposed to go through and have at least 6 of those 9.
I have to say, and with most of the things that you've just described just now sounds like my husband.
it's not uncommon.
No, and that's I was going to say, but that's the thing is, like, where we are right now, obviously, you know, people are starting to, you know, be able to identify this much earlier on. But I personally think there are so many adults out there who basically have not been diagnosed with it, but I feel have ADHD.
Well, it didn't used to be diagnosed much at all. It was just felt to be, you know, they were lazy, they weren't trying, you know, they weren't that smart. Boys that have behavioral problems got identified more because of their behaviors than about their problems with the attentional issues. But it was more thought to be a discipline issue, you know, years ago. Now, you know, we're certainly identifying it more. But girls often get misidentified more than boys because a lot of times they don't have the behavioral problems. And so they kind of are daydreaming or looking out the window and just not focusing, and it's not picked up as easily.
Right.
And so, so they don't get identified nearly as quickly as the boys often.
Right. Because that's funny because I can think about it. You hear so many times of, oh, no, she's just a quiet girl. Oh, she's a daydreamer. She's always somewhere else playing with the fairies, etc. And it was just, I think to some degree, certainly me growing up in England, it was tended to be like, oh, that's just a girl thing. And that's what it was just, she's just a girl or he's just being a boy. You know,
right.
And that's what it was. For some reason, people just assume that this was a normal behavior for a girl to look out the window and daydream or not concentrate, and for a boy to be disorganized and to be forgetful. And it's crazy because I feel like at some stage it was almost like normal.
Yes, it certainly was very much normalized. And then as we started identifying it more, you know, there was always the thought that people always outgrew it as they got to be a teenager. And
right.
then it started getting identified that, well, not everyone outgrows it. Yeah. And now the thoughts are that there are some people that seem to outgrow it. Another group of people, the symptoms lessen during teenage years, but they still have some. And then there's still a third group that has all the symptoms full force into adulthood.
Right.
I also have had a lot of experience with adults that come in that were never identified earlier, never really had big problems in, say, elementary school or middle school, or sometimes even high school because they're very bright.
Mm-hmm.
But they get to college or they get to graduate school where they really need that organization. They really need to be able to focus in and be organized and, you know, not get distracted by things. And that's when they start falling apart. And
right.
not be able to succeed anymore.
Right. And you often hear of that, right? You often hear of that very super smart kid who went to college and then dropped out.
Yes. And that's sometimes the case. And it's usually the very bright people that have been able to get by just on their intelligence, even though they don't do the work or they don't have to focus very much.
Right. So I just want to find out, integrative treatments, can you elaborate on that for a little bit, please?
Yes. Integrative treatment means looking for other reasons. So, for instance, since we're talking about attention deficit, mm-hmm. an integrative treatment for attention deficit would be looking to see, does this person have, for instance, food allergies that might be causing them not to be able to focus? Do they have any problems with either an infection in their digestive system or another problem going on in their digestive system that means they're not absorbing nutrients correctly and they have a nutritional deficiency? Or do they have a biochemical imbalance? Some of the biochemical imbalances might mean they have too little zinc in their body, too much copper. They have something called pyrrole disorder, which draws out the zinc and the vitamin B6, which are necessary to make the neurotransmitters be able to stay focused and pay attention. Do they have toxins in their body that might be affecting things? Do they have a thyroid condition or some other hormonal issues going on? So I look for all those kind of things. I look to see, are they anemic? If you don't have enough blood, that means you're not getting enough oxygen to your brain. You also don't have enough iron that's necessary to make the neurotransmitters. So I'm looking at all those different aspects. I'm also looking at, you know, what's their sleep like? Are they getting exercise? Mm-hmm. Are they in front of the computer all the time and not being able to focus because they just stay on that? And that's kind of an addiction in many ways for these children. But they're also not learning how to do other kind of things.
Right.
Sometimes we'll use things like neurofeedback, which is a method of training the brain to have different brainwave patterns. We found that people with attention deficit often have more slow brainwaves in the front part of their brain than people without attention deficit. And so what we do is we train them to have fewer of the slow brainwaves in the front and more faster brainwaves that help them think and focus better.
Okay.
So there are lots of different things that we can do other than just look at, you know, medicine for this.
Wonderful. That's good to know that. I want to take a very, very quick commercial break before we go any further. But for all our listeners out there, just to remind you that our wonderful guest this morning, is Phyllis J. Hefner, and she's a psychiatrist and the owner of Holistic Child Psychiatry, LLC, from Columbia, Maryland. Please go visit the website, which is www.holisticchildpsychiatry.com. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
This is Principal Broadcasting, the professional's choice.
What are all the things you witness online in a day? Cats playing piano, selfies on your feed, your friend's picture being turned into a nasty meme that's been shared 50 times, 51, 52. When someone's being bullied online, it's hard to know what to do. Now you can speak up with the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is Mario Andretti. You know me as a race car driver, but I'm also a Meals on Wheels volunteer. I've raced against the sport's biggest personalities, but I've never met more vibrant, amazing people than the seniors served by Meals on Wheels. You can make a difference by dropping off a hot meal and saying a quick hello. So, America, let's do lunch. Volunteer your lunch break at americaletsdolunch.org.
This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Principal Broadcasting, featuring the League of Professionals with Muriel Donnelly, weekdays 10 to 4 p.m., with current topics to elevate your career to the next level.
Good morning and welcome back to Principal Broadcasting. I'm your host, Muriel Donnelly, and our wonderful guest this morning is Dr. Phyllis J. Hefner, who is a psychiatrist and the owner of Holistic Child Psychiatry, LLC, from Columbia, Maryland. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
I got it right that time. I have no idea what happened. I keep saying good afternoon. I'm like, oh, it's Thursday. Yay. So before the break, then we were talking about ADHD within children and adults and the integrative treatments. I wanted to move on now to autism and biomedical treatment. So let's start off and talk about autism, because I feel like this is something that maybe people can identify with a little bit more.
Well, autism has really gotten to be an epidemic. Mm-hmm. When I was in medical school and in residency, we used to say that someone had autism maybe one out of between 5 and 10,000 people. It's now down to about one in between 40 to 60.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's really not just because we're identifying it more, but because it's really, truly happening more. And a lot of it is for the same reasons that I talked about with attention deficit, very much environmental. Our genes have not changed. You know, autism certainly has a genetic component to it. Mm-hmm. But it's a very complicated genetic component. There's not one gene or even just a few genes. It really has to do with a lot of different things interacting. And it seems like the people that develop autism are kind of the people who are what we call the canaries in the coal mine. They're people that have some genetic weaknesses in things like detoxification, or there's other kind of problems that when the right situation happens, they tend to be more sensitive than others.
Right.
So with our current environment the way it is, with all the toxins in, you know, that are on the foods, because they put all kinds of chemicals on them, pesticides and herbicides and things, with all the toxins in the air and in the water, with the EMFs that are in the air and, you know, surrounding us constantly, with everything else that's going on, the rise of the prevalence of autism has been dramatic.
Wow, that's staggering, those numbers that you just gave out.
They are staggering, and there are some researchers that are predicting that if things keep going the way they are, it might eventually be as much as one in two children born.
Goodness.
Wow. It's scary.
That is...
It's very scary.
Wow. So let's...
And we need to make...
Yes, please carry on.
We need to make changes.
Right. So first of all, let's because this is very, very serious right now. One in two children born could have autism.
It could be.
Right. So let's, first of all, with autism, how early can they identify a child with autism?
Well, some children you can tell very early, within the first year. Mm-hmm. And the researchers are working very hard at finding different screening techniques to try to identify them as early as possible. Most children are not identified until they are two or older. And there are many children that are on the mild part of the spectrum that aren't identified until they are even sometime in school age. The range of the severity of each person's autism varies tremendously. So we can go from people that are generally don't look that bad and look pretty normal, except that they don't interact real well. They're socially awkward, and they may get overly fixated on a very narrow range of interests, mm-hmm. to people that are totally nonverbal, non-interactive, not able to talk, not able to take care of themselves at all. So it's a very wide range. Some of the people that are afflicted with autism are extraordinarily bright, and they can go through college and be, you know, have a very satisfying life for them. Other people are very delayed in their development,
right.
and never are able to do anything without having someone there to care for them.
Wow.
And are constantly needing to be monitored and cared for.
Okay.
So it's a wide range, you know, but like I said, most people, they don't get identified until they're somewhere 2, 3 or older than that. The earlier they're identified and the earlier they're given intervention, the better their prognosis.
Okay. So let's talk about this then. Let's talk about biomedical treatments.
Yeah. The biomedical treatments are really looking at there are various factors that are affecting their bodies that can also then affect how well they do. We cannot cure autism.
Right.
But what we can do is we can look at different things that may be playing a role. So, for instance, many children with autism have digestive system problems. They have a lot of problems with constipation. They have problems with abdominal pain. They have problems sometimes with inflammatory bowel disease. And so looking and taking care of any kind of digestive problems, mm-hmm. often these children do not tolerate a lot of different foods. Preferentially, they tend to go towards very limited numbers of foods, and so they can end up having nutritional deficiencies.
Right.
In addition, they often have sensitivities to many, many foods. And so often one of the things that we do is we put them on special diets, diets that take away things like gluten and casein, which is from dairy products, because those are foods that they often don't do well with. We will also look to see, do they have a problem with other things in foods? For instance, something called oxalates or salicylates. These are substances that are in certain foods, and if the person has sensitivities to those, it can cause a lot of pain. And pain, because they cannot necessarily express it or deal with it in a way, can sometimes express itself in aggression or temper outbursts or self-injury even. Mm-hmm. And so we will try to figure out, is that what's going on with their behavior? And so we will put them on a special diet that reduces or eliminates those substances that they may be relating to. We'll look to see, do they have any type of problem with heavy metals,
right.
with other
right.
kind of toxins in their system. And if so, we will work on detoxifying them. And there's different ways to do that, from ionic foot baths, which is a very gentle way, to sometimes chelation or using far infrared saunas.
Wow.
Sometimes we'll use hyperbaric oxygen therapy to give extra oxygen to their brains, which will help their brains, you know, develop better, and also help, you know, any kind of other thing that may be keeping their brain from working as well as it can, because the oxygen is beneficial that way.
Right.
So we're looking at lots of different things that may be affecting their bodies, mm-hmm. in order to get that out of the way and help them focus the best. We might use things like low-dose naltrexone, which is something that helps with the immune system, because people with autism often have immune problems. We might work on helping their mitochondria work better, because often the mitochondria, which are the energy powerhouses of those cells, just aren't functioning as well as they could. And that can give the person more energy and more muscle strength, because a lot of times these children just don't have a lot of muscle strength or muscle coordination, and that makes a difference with how they function. Right. We can use something like oxytocin, which is a hormone that mothers make as they're breastfeeding a child, and it helps with interactions and in relationships, and giving it to an autistic child can sometimes help them interact and relate better to other people.
Wonderful.
It's called the love hormone many times.
I like the sound of that. We've unfortunately come to the end of our show, but I have to say, I mean, this is amazing facts that, you've just given us. And I have to say that they're crazy and they're scary to some degree. And I think we should all, it's been one of those things, a very educational show. I think a lot of people should go and do some more research and think about what we can do to eradicate, get rid of this problem, our lifestyles, the all the rubbishing toxins that we have, the pesticides and all that stuff. So thank you so much, Dr. Hefner. It's been a wonderful show and I think a very learned show. So for everyone out there, just to remind you, our wonderful guest this morning has been Dr. Phyllis J. Hefner, and she is a psychiatrist and the owner of Holistic Child Psychiatry, LLC from Columbia, Maryland. Please go visit the website, www.holisticchildpsychiatry.com. And you can also email them at holisticchildpsychiatrist@gmail.com or give them a call. The phone number is 410-260-0344. Again, thank you so much for being with us this morning. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
This is Principal Broadcasting, the professional's choice.